All right, so we're back. It's episode 4.
Science stuff.
You are Katie.
And you're Will.
Yep. And you want to tell everyone what we're going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about how much I hate Daredevil. Because it's like the most overrated show that was released in 2015.
Okay. Well, we're also going to talk about how much I love Jessica Jones.
That too. I think that it's really good to compare the two of them because they're like Hell's Kitchen residents and because they kind of, they're part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but they're probably the only good shows that have come out of that. That's a pretty bold statement, but yeah, they've been pretty well received by fans, I think. And I think in one case, Jessica Jones is it's merited. And I think in the Daredevil case, like, I don't understand. I feel like everyone's been watching a different show to me.
You're going to get a reputation of being the hater on this podcast.
Am I? This is like, but think about how much I love Buffy, guys. Like, I love Buffy. And I love really bad shows as well. So, you know, maybe I should do a list as a disclaimer of shows that I love.
So people know that you have enthusiasm for things.
Yeah. I love things. So, no, but I'm definitely a hater of Daredevil for sure.
All right. Well, before we start, though, we've gotten some feedback on the last couple episodes.
We have.
So,
do you want to go first?
No, you should go first because it relates to you being a hater.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So my good pal, Alex, has sent me a WAP after she listened to the last episode. Very, very annoyed at me because of how much I hated on Kylo Ren. So I'm just going to read what she said. And she said, mate, they did Kylo Ren in the Mask and Vader light look because he's a tryhard and not all shit hot, but he's just trying to create an image for himself so people associate him with Vader, hence the bad temper, hissy fits, etc. He's massively insecure and in that way is way more dangerous. So Alex, if you can't tell from that statement, was really into the portrayal of Kylo Ren by Adam Driver and thinks that I completely missed the whole point of what he was trying to achieve. My response is that, like, I get that's what he was trying to achieve, but for me, it was just too much.
Yeah, I think I talked about it a little bit that he's, you know, he's intentionally supposed to be trying to be Vader and failing at it, and everyone can kind of see through it. And the whole movie, like, nobody takes him seriously. Everybody's giving him shit. Everybody's telling him that, like, they know who he really is and he's not, you know, some great Sith Lord.
Yeah. And, like, I can definitely see what the two of you are saying to me, but I think, I don't know.
You just think the emo is overdone?
The emo's overdone. I think I said on the podcast, like, if they'd maybe had one scene where he was, like, smashing stuff with his lightsaber, then maybe. But it just, for me, it screamed like petulant teenager. And, you know, he's really nuanced in Girls, and I kind of expected a bit more of that. But I'm happy to be disproven. And, you know, Alex is smart, you're smart. Maybe you guys are right and I'm wrong. And I'm okay with it.
Have you watched it again yet?
No.
Okay.
You should
report back after that happens.
Okay, I will do. Because I think I probably will like him more second viewing.
I think I did. I think I liked everything more in the second viewing. Yeah. And I've seen it a third time now.
Nice.
But it hasn't really changed any of my fundamental criticisms or the things I liked. But, oh, I should say this. When I saw it at the Cinerama here in Seattle, the music was way louder in the theater. And it was so much more enjoyable. Like,
oh, because of what we talked about with the score, feeling like really understated. And
yeah.
Weird.
And in... it was noticeably louder than the first two times I saw it. I don't know if it's up to the theater to decide how loud they can play it or why that happened, if they just had way better sound systems. I mean, I saw it in an IMAX 3D the first time, so you'd expect it to have a good sound system. But the music was so much louder and so much more noticeable.
I mean, I think sound editing is really weird at the moment, where like the dialogue scenes are always really quiet and then the like gunfire is like crazy loud. And then you get the DVD and you're having to like turn it up and turn it down all the time because it ends up too bassy. Like the whole thing is very weird.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, you should.
So maybe it's, you know, down to different theaters to decide their sound levels. I don't know. Does anyone have thoughts on that? I have no idea. I don't know about stuff.
I don't know. People can tweet at us and tell us.
Yeah.
Okay, so I also got some feedback about the Buffy episode, and it's a voice message, so I can actually play it on the air.
Just listen to the Buffy one. It's pretty great. It makes me, when you guys start talking about, like, what made you addicted, like, makes me think of when I was a kid and I had VHSs that, like, my aunt would record. I had two of them in particular. One was Terminator 2 and Harley Davidson Marlboro Man on one to just, like, record over. And then the other one was... Predator and Tango and Cash with Kurt Russell and Sly Stallone. Just that was my youngest, probably, yeah, like addiction. I just listened to those or watched those all the time. And it was just like you said, it was when you watch something over and over again, you just pick up more and more each time. But the one that blew my fucking mind and made me love movies was Pulp Fiction. That movie was incredible and so fucked up, mind fucking as like a young kid when I watched it.
All right. So that is awesome. Would love to hear more from other people about like their formative movies that did that kind of cracking open your mind thing. And that's
Tango and Cash. What a great movie.
Tango and Cash.
That was one of your like entry into pop culture criticism. That's cool. We should link to the Flophouse Tango and Cash episode in the notes because it's awesome and hilarious and a fan favorite. I'm going to try and not reference the Flophouse in every single podcast that we do.
Yeah, I think.
sorry, I just love them.
But I want other people to write in or tweet us, and if you figure out a way to send us a voice message, if you tweet me, I will work with you so you can send me a voice message because it's fun to play them, and it's super fascinating to hear what people's like formative movies were that they just drilled into their brain by watching over and over and over again. And that was my friend Burns. And I also watched Terminator 2 many, many, many times. So like, I totally relate to that. And tell us.
I love the idea of them both movies being on the same VHS, because I think pretty much everyone that grew up in the 80s and the early 90s can like relate to that, because I remember I had The Labyrinth and The Goonies on the same tape, and I literally watched it to death. It was so much fun. So yeah.
And you would record them from TV, so sometimes it'd be like commercials and stuff on it, and you would just watch the same things over and over again.
So weird. But they're great movies. Terminator especially. I think we're going to do a Terminator episode, so he should feed in after that.
Terminator 2, for sure. It's probably my favorite movie. Spoiler alert, guys.
Wow, that's impressive.
Not the best movie, but it is...
Your favorite?
Yeah.
I don't know what my favorite movie is.
It's up there. I mean, so is Empire. There's a couple other ones. The Matrix.
I think my favorite movie is Romeo and Juliet. Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. I love that film.
Is that the one set in present day?
Yeah, with Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah, Dreamboat DiCaprio. And I also love There Will Be Blood. That's a bit more of a cool one, though, isn't it? To like, I guess. But yeah.
All right, so we should do Daredevil and Jessica Jones.
Let's do it. So I would like to put a disclaimer out that I have not read the Daredevil comics. Like, I am not a Daredevil person. So all of this is just based on me watching season one of Daredevil on Netflix. And I mean, I'm interested in what people have to say in terms of it being authentic to the comics, which I've heard a lot of people saying it is, especially Matt Murdock, as in Charlie Cox's portrayal of Matt Murdock. People seem to be really into it. But I've not read the comics, so I have no kind of basis for it in that sense. And I can accept that it's better than Ben Affleck's film version. Like, I'm ripping it, but it's not as bad as that, okay? Like, whatever that complete mess was in the early noughties. So, yeah, just to put two kind of disclaimers in there.
I haven't read it either, or any of the Jessica Jones comics. I've read their Wikipedia pages, and I've maybe read a couple issues of Daredevil that was in one of my friend's trade paperbacks, and I just wanted to kind of check it out. And I think it was Frank, what's his name? Frank
Miller?
Frank Miller's Daredevil, yeah.
Yeah.
So
I wasn't sure if it would be him, I just guessed.
No, that's a good guess. The Daredevil Omnibus or something. It's like a huge collection. But I haven't read enough to know anything.
Basically. Yeah, I've read really, this is a full-time discussion. Like, I've read very little Marvel and DC. Like, so, you know, my Marvel and DC stuff is always their cinematic universe, really.
Right.
But yeah, so just as a caveat before we start talking about it.
Okay, so take us away on what's wrong with Daredevil.
So I think we'd just to structure it a little. So I'm going to talk about like 4.5 things that annoyed me about the show. So one is the main character. 2 is the supporting characters. 3 is the pace, and 4 is the tone. And then there's a point and a half of under the tone, which is to do with a particular scene that they portray in, I think, episode 6. But I'll get to that a bit later. But I mean, basically, from that list, you can kind of tell that, like, it's the whole show that I kind of have a problem with. and it's interesting. And the reason I wanted to talk about it, maybe it is partly because I'm coming across as a bit of a hater, but, like, it's been so well reviewed. I think it had something ridiculous, like 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, it's, you know, people love this show. And I kind of was watching it and I couldn't understand why anyone was really enjoying it, and so that's why I wanted to talk about it, because I'd be interested to hear defenses. And also, we both recently just watched Jessica Jones, which is another show that people have been, like, you know, raving about, and it's got some really positive reviews as well. And I think I'd just like to compare the two, because I think they're quite similar. Not only because they've both got residents, you know, they're both set in Hell's Kitchen, but also because, like, the tone is quite similar in both. But I think where Daredevil fails Jessica Jones, you know, it kind of nails it. So yeah, how does that sound?
That sounds really good. I'm interested. Cool. I haven't heard these criticisms structured like this, so
okay,
I'm excited for it.
So the main character. So now I can't figure out what my problem with Daredevil is. I can't figure out if it's Charlie Cox and how Charlie Cox is portraying him, or if it's how he's written. But I find him very difficult to like as a main character, in both forms. So I find Matt Murdock really like patronizing. And I find Daredevil, like, way too violent. And so I have read some criticisms of the early episodes being too violent. And so I'll just point to one particular scene. I'm sure other people who have watched the show will know what I'm talking about. But in the second episode, he tortures a guy via his optic nerve. And I'm just like, what is happening? Like, why is a superhero torturing someone on the roof of an apartment block? It, for me, it just undermines the whole show from that point, because it's like, you know, it's like when Obama was quoted saying, oh, we tortured some folks. And it's like, what do you mean? Like, you're supposed to be the good guy, okay? So it really stressed me out, because right from the off, it was extremely violent. And I felt like it was a really morally bankrupt thing for him to do, to just torture a guy in a brutal way, like through his optic nerve. So it kind of all started falling apart from then. So I find Daredevil too violent. And then I find Matt really difficult to like as well. Now, part of this might just be how Daredevil is written. So I think he's kind of like Batman, right? And I don't like Batman either. God, I really do sound like a hater. Sorry. I don't like Batman because Batman is like a right-wing hero. Like, I'm not into it. You know, he goes, it's that meme about how he goes after individual muggers rather than, like, attempting to derail the system that keeps him in his privilege. Like, it's annoying. And I think this is the problem with Matt, because in this show, it seems like he was failing at being a lawyer and failing at getting people, you know, getting criminals put away or getting people that were kind of innocent protected legally. So then he just dresses up and decides to, like, beat them up in alleyways, which I can't really understand that as motivation at all. Right? It's like unsatisfying, because he just can't do his job properly. So he decides to just become some weird vigilante. And so his motivations feel really weird. And it's like, if you can't put hashtag criminals behind bars, then I'm just going to chase after them in the night and beat them to death. Like, he pushes that guy off the top of the apartment block and he lands in a dumpster and he's, like, almost dead. And two people kill themselves after meeting him, like, in episode whatever it's for. He tortures this guy to get information out of him. And then he names Wilson Fisk as, like, the kingpin. And then he hangs himself. And again, it's so brutal and gross. And I'm just like, this is disgusting. And then another guy kills himself as well. Like, and I'm just there and I'm like, why is this superhero causing all of these deaths? And it's like, I don't know if the show thinks that it's because they're criminals, like, morally it's okay that they're dying and he's torturing them because they're criminals. But on the other hand, it's like the first guy that kills himself by hanging himself once he tells Matt about Fisk, it's like he's so afraid and he's living in such fear that he literally committed suicide. And you're like, this person is as much a victim as everyone else, you know? So yeah, that's my first criticism of the show.
Okay.
I've talked a lot. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I haven't heard this criticism before. I think to some degree, the or maybe to a high degree, the reason that they're having the criminals kill themselves, it's just cred building for the villain. It's just the show saying, look how scary Fisk is, that someone who even says his name is terrified into killing themselves because of how powerful this guy is. So I don't think that's supposed to be a reflection on Matt. I think that's supposed to be the way the show is trying to communicate to us, how afraid of Fisk we should be.
Yeah.
The torture thing. I think him and Batman, they're both doing the vigilante thing because they're like, they think the system doesn't work, which I think that they're right about in their respective world and probably in our world. And so they're like, well, I'm going to take things into my own hands. And, you know, it's usually like they are attempting to go for people who are kind of like at the tops of these hierarchies, these criminal hierarchies or political hierarchies. And then they're just kind of like, you know, they go through the small time criminals, kind of like work their way up to get to who actually is at fault for it.
Yeah.
Daredevil torturing people. Yeah. I mean, they definitely did that early on. I think it was definitely a statement from the show. It was this is pure speculation. It's probably because they're worried about how much Matt Murdock is going to be compared to Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
And I think that the like torturing thing is like, we've got to start out right from the beginning and show that this is not just a Batman XP. This is a different character, and he's darker and he's edgier and he's going farther into the pragmatic hero flirting with the dark side. He's going more into that territory than Batman is, and isn't that exciting and isn't that new and interesting. I don't know whether or not that is new or interesting, but I think that's probably the motivation for it. Again, that's like author intent motivation. That's not like, how should we judge Matt for actually doing those things?
Right. And like, I can get it. And like, as I said, this might be how that character is written, but for someone just watching this show, I found Matt and / Daredevil extremely unlikable and very difficult to warm to. And it's interesting that you talk about Fisk as like, oh, the reason is because they're trying to make Fisk out to be the most terrifying. But the other side of this coin with Matt is that
Fisk is kind of likable.
He's much more likable. And that's a massive problem, isn't it? Like, you can't have your, like, supervillain who, by the way, beheaded someone 4 episodes in. Like, it's not that he's not violent either. And yet, there's something about him which warms you to him more than Matt. Like, I think he's a much more sympathetic character. I'm not sure if it's because of the portrayal or the writing or whatever, but Fisk he's just more likable than Matt is. I mean, at first I was like, you know, I like to question why I think this. And at first I was like, is it just because I think the guy playing Fisk is hotter than the guy playing Matt? Because you know how sometimes I'm led by my lady boner, right? But I really think that he's like, I don't know, I'm always more attracted to characters that are morally ambiguous rather than characters that are pretending to be good but are actually morally ambiguous. Like, it annoys me because I'm like, know yourself a little bit better and appreciate that complexity within you, right? So I think the problem is I can totally understand why it's Vanessa, right, Fisk's partner. I can totally understand why she's attracted to him, because I'm like, he's kind of got that whole thing about when someone's so awful and capable of such terrible deeds, only thinks of you. That massive trope about the bad boy being, you know, his one thing is that he loves you or whatever. So I can kind of get it. And I can also get it in terms of him being a very powerful, charming person and interesting. But like, Matt is just dull. And I can't understand why Rosario Dawson's character is interested in him at all, especially because of how they meet, which I'll get onto later. But I think that that's another difficulty that I have with this show, is that really early on, and I was live foxing you, wasn't I, when I was watching the show, like really early on, I was like, I really like Fisk and I don't like Matt. This is a problem.
Yeah. I found Matt kind of dull also, but
yeah.
That's my criticism of the show in general, is that I didn't find it to be kind of like original enough to get me really into it.
Yeah.
But,
and like, if we think about it in terms of Jessica Jones, right? So Jessica Jones does some pretty problematic stuff, and her personality is extremely difficult to like. And, you know, she treats people in her life horribly, especially Luke and Malcolm and other people in her life. And yet she's not as, she's kind of, again, she kind of just like owns it a little bit. Like she's aware and she doesn't pretend to be, you know, this all virtuous justice, fighting for justice person. She's got one enemy that she's trying to eradicate and that's the end of it. And there's something much more satisfying about that, I think, as a viewer. And similarly with Kilgrave, I think Kilgrave is a really interesting character. I think David Tennant does an incredible job of portraying him. In one part of it, it's kind of like the Doctor goes evil. But again, I was kind of into that because he was my favorite Doctor Who. But even with his charm and attraction, I'm still rooting for Jessica. Whereas with Fisk, I'm not rooting for Matt. I'm like, oh, well, maybe Fisk can sort out the city because let's face it, Matt and all his lawyer buddies have totally fucked it up, you know?
Well, you're actually rooting for Fisk? Is that what you're telling me?
Kind of a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Like in the terms that I can understand that, well, out of the two of them, I mean, I would root for Fisk more. Like, because I think his motivations are clearer. And even if he's misguided and his approach isn't maybe working, like, I can appreciate that he thinks he's trying to make the city better. And like, at the end of the day, if he's not willfully going out and torturing people and pretending to be a good person, then that's fine. That's fine with me. It's
yeah, but I mean, he's crushing people's heads in car doors and ordering children to be kidnapped.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong. He does some really brutal stuff as well. Yeah, yeah. No, no, no. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to whitewash him at all. Like I said, he beheaded someone 4 episodes in, and yet I still like him more than I like Matt. And that is problematic, right? Like there's something wrong with how they've framed both those characters or how they've written them, because I shouldn't feel so warm to him.
I don't know if it is. That might be intentional. I mean, it might be intentional that you have charismatic, likable villains that are powerful and can control citywide events, and then you have unlikable heroes who are actually trying to fight the good fight and you know, have messy methods. It may be intentional. Yeah. I'm not saying that makes it an enjoyable thing to watch, but I think that might be possibly the point of it.
Yeah, I'm with you. And like, I mean, they have this so I'm going to keep comparing it to The Dark Knight, and I compare the tone to The Dark Knight later on. But they have that kind of thing with The Dark Knight as well, right? Where it's like the villains are, you know, are they any worse and all of this kind of stuff than like the attorneys or whatever, especially in the Batman universe. You know, the attorney general is corrupt. Everyone's corrupt. Are the criminals any worse and blah, blah, blah. So I kind of get it, right? The idea of having the two sides of the same person and they're, you know, we're all capable of darkness and all capable of good and complexity and all of that. I love it. And I think it's great. And like, I think they do it well in Jessica Jones with Kilgrave, because that whole show does a really interesting critique of consent and kind of representations of different ways that consent can be abused or whatever. And it's like, ultimately, there's one scene where Kilgrave he goes into a house and he's like, he just tells all the people that live there, the residents of this like apartment, sorry, not a house. He goes in and he tells all the residents, I'm going to be staying here for a few weeks. You're going to be delighted about it. And then this woman is portrayed as being really happy. Now, don't get me wrong, it's fake, right? And she hasn't agreed to it. But there's like this complexity there where it's like he's taken the opportunity to give someone a joyful feeling. You know what I mean? So it's like, again, I'm not trying to say that Kilgrave is a good person. I think it's really obvious that he's not. But like, he's also, there's part of him that wants Jessica to be in love with him and wants Jessica to be happy. And he does all of this stuff because in his twisted way, he thinks it will make her happy, like recreating her childhood home or whatever.
Well, you so, also remember he knows he can't control her at that point.
He knows he can't control her at that point, but there's still drive, right, to try to make someone happy. So like, I'm fine with complexity in villains, and I'm fine with complexity in superheroes. But I think the problem is there's not much that's likable about Matt, and it's difficult to enjoy the show as a result.
I suspect that Vincent D'Onofrio is just a way, way better actor who far outclasses the guy playing Matt. And I think that that's probably what a lot of this is.
Maybe. I mean, but then, so, Charlie Cox was in Stardust.
I've never seen him before. No.
Okay, so because he's British, right? He's a British actor. And he was in like Stardust and a couple of other things. And he's pretty charming in that, you know, it's like a fun family romp thing. Like it's like a fantasy thing. And, you know, he plays this kid who's kind of annoying and then grows up a little bit. It's all very Princess Bride-y. And, you know, he's nice in that and he's quite likable. So I don't know. I can't figure out if it's just they went too dark with him or if it's his portrayal or if it's the writing or whatever, but there's something about him that I find intensely unlikable, which obviously causes huge problems because he's the protagonist of the show.
Right. I was annoyed at him throughout the show for the way he would treat like Foggy and Karen. Yeah. And he would do these like, you know, he would like make up these rules like, oh, well, we should never take money from a client like this. And then on the side, he would realize, oh, like I can actually figure out who this, you know, who this lawyer is. And then I can beat him up as Daredevil. So now I'm going to go back to Foggy and be like, oh, no, we absolutely should take money from them because we have to have honor as a law firm. And now we've already accepted them as a client. And so we need to keep going with it. And the whole time I was like, will you just tell like your best friend what's going on here?
Yeah.
And so I found like kind of his attitude of like, I'm just going to keep lying to my friends and not even do a good job of lying to them kind of frustrating. And
it's sanctimonious, right? It's like you don't know everything and you're not like the smartest person in this room and we should work together, you know, the camaraderie.
Right. And once everyone kind of knows, I found it more interesting. But I the best thing about him was, I think, which is people who like Daredevil from the comics, I assume is what they like about Daredevil, is like his willingness to get beaten up and keep fighting. And they really leaned on that in the show, that like he just takes a beating probably more than any other superhero I've ever seen. And he keeps fighting. And like that to me is a kind of like a heroic hook.
It
doesn't make me like him more than Jessica or anybody else. Yeah, he gets wailed on. Yeah, he gets stabbed. Yeah. I mean, he's has broken ribs. He's like near half death dead when he multiple meets, times. Claire finds him in a dumpster.
Yeah, exactly. Although maybe he's just a sadist. Like he just wants to be punished. He knows. Like there's all.
I think that's definitely an element of it. I think like, you know, there's some kind
feels
of
guilt
punishing yourself.
Because he's Catholic, right? They play up his Catholicism quite a lot. It could be partly that. I say that as a Catholic. I would come up being like flip. It's good that you brought up Foggy and Karen and Claire, because I think the other problem that I have with it is that the supporting characters or the supporting cast, however you want to, they're not really fleshed out. And I feel like they're quite one-dimensional, which again, like, I don't want to turn this into a direct comparison with Jessica Jones, but the supporting characters in Jessica Jones are not like this. They have much more complexity and they're much more interesting. Like to the point that I had to look up, it's been a while since I watched it, but I had to look up both Rosario Dawson and Jessica from True Blood's real name, like name in the show, because I couldn't remember. Like I kind of remembered Karen, but I couldn't remember Claire. And then Rosario Dawson, Claire disappears for like, she's in the first, what, six episodes and then she's gone. And so it frustrated me because these are very talented actresses and actors that they've got in this show. And yet they don't seem to have done a huge amount with them. And it seems to be that the development of Fisk and Matt has been at the expense of some of the supporting cast. And as someone who is a big fan of Buffy and Angel and Firefly and things that aren't modern,
like the ensemble.
I like the ensemble and I want there to be a group dynamic and I want there to be like, you know, character comparisons and us to get to know them collectively over time and see their interactions. Cause the human bit, like the human interactive aspect of all these shows is always the most interesting. It's always more interesting to see someone struggling with like moral dilemmas and stuff when you know their background and their whatever. And when you just have two characters and it's just about driving their narrative, although let's talk about pace later, but you know, if it's just about driving forward the narrative of these two, the protagonist and the antagonist, then the show feels very threadbare. And I found that quite a lot with this show. And on top of that, I really didn't like Nelson. Like I thought that he was just such a like a quip machine. You know, he's just there to add weird one-liners, and it came across as snarky rather than endearing. And I kind of just wasn't into him at all. And I really didn't like the Murdoch versus Nelson episode that everyone like talks about as this great episode and amazing piece of drama. And it just felt very contrived because they're obviously not going to break up. They're obviously going to get back together. You've just done this to have like a dramatic episode. It's the kind of thing that like Friends and other shows like that used to do. And so it just felt a bit weird and tonally weird.
I found then, like, Foggy's humor annoying.
Yeah, just so annoying, right? Like, I'm kind of a bit irritating and a bit like snipey. I couldn't really, he kind of just came across as mean. Like, it, I don't know. And then like Ben, I don't understand. Like, was he just brought into the show to die? Like, is that his whole role? Like, he was completely underdeveloped until Fisk had him murdered. And again, I think it's because maybe the writers realized, oh no, people are going to like really warn to Wilson Fisk. Let's have him do something awful, like kill this innocent reporter. So yeah, I think disappointing characters were just badly done.
I don't think anyone is worried about people warming. I think you may be the only person warming to Fisk.
What? No, I'm not. Am I?
Oh, he's interesting, but I don't think anyone out there is rooting for Fisk. Or
really? Like, not even when he's like next to Vanessa in the hospital and he's like absolutely like, on the one hand, incandescent with rage, and on the other hand, completely desperate and broken. Like, it was such a nuanced performance. I was really into it. I loved him.
Oh,
like,
no,
his whole betrayal was amazing.
Interesting. And his betrayal is
to him. It really did. It's messed up. Right?
I mean, maybe you have a harder time separating, like having sympathy or empathy for characters with rooting for them.
Yeah, probably.
Because I definitely was sympathetic to him. I mean, I think they wanted you to. They showed that whole like flashback about his childhood, which I'm sure you'll describe in a little bit because it's in. I know it's one of your criticisms. But the whole point of that was to humanize Fisk.
Yeah,
like very
absolutely.
Clearly. So I don't think that they're worried about people like liking him too much. I think they wanted people to kind of empathize with what he'd been through and have him be a real well-rounded person instead of just a comic book villain.
Which is great, right? And don't get me wrong, I really appreciated it. And Whisk. Let's just call him Whisk. No. Wilson Fisk is the highlight of this show for me. Like, I think he's brilliant. He's like my favorite bit of the show. So, you know, I do think that they've done that in the sense that they've created a character, a villain that's complex and emotional and interesting to watch. And sympathetic. But it's, yeah, my problem is everything else doesn't, you know, it's not good enough to make me not root for him. And okay, let's just theoretically discuss whether or not I should be rooting for him. So like, if we talk about the fact that the world, the Hell's Kitchen in this universe is like totally fucked. So like the cops are all corrupt. The legal system doesn't work. You've got good guys like Matt and Foggy trying to do the, you know, trying to fight the good fight and getting nowhere, to the point that this otherwise totally rational person thinks becoming a vigilante is the way to go, right? So this environment is fucked up. So why not give a totalitarian crime lord the opportunity to regenerate his city if it means that some people will get housing and whatever? You know, couldn't make it any worse, right? So I've got this kind of...
You sound like Anakin Skywalker in episode 2.
I don't. That is the worst thing you've ever said to me. Okay, let me try.
Why not give dictatorship a try?
No, I didn't say... Okay, I didn't mean that. So we should... definitely don't quote me saying that. Like, I just mean, why not give this individual person who thinks that they've got an answer the opportunity? At the end of the day, if we're forgiving Matt for killing bad guys, why can't we forgive Fisk for killing other bad guys? That's my problem with the show. Like, this environment and this world that it's rooted in.
I mean, he's not just killing bad guys, right? He's like kicking people out of their apartment building in order to build some new office. He's having children kidnapped in order to force people to do what he wants. Maybe
it was a long time ago when I watched it, but I just remember thinking to myself, like, he thinks he can fix it. Like, the current structures that are in place can't fix it. So, you know, whatever. But anyway, we should move on because I'm sounding like a psychopath and we're going to have to cut a lot of that.
I'm not cutting it. Everyone's going to hear you rooting for a supervillain.
No, don't say that. It's awful. I mean, I don't mind rooting for him, but I definitely don't want to be quoted as saying that I believe in totalitarian dictatorships because I clearly don't. I'm like, fully automated luxury communism.
I mean, like, he just has a, he has like a perspective that he's doing good, which I really, you know, like, I don't want to even praise that too much because it's basically what every villain should have in every story. Mm-hmm. And I think we've just gotten so used to quote unquote comic book villains where they're just evil for evil's sake.
Yeah, the maniacal kind of Joker wants to see the world burn.
Right. Instead of, you know, Magneto is like my favorite comic book villain because Magneto has like a legitimate perspective. He's a Holocaust survivor. He's like, I've seen what happens when the majority of people decide that some minority is evil or wrong or bad. And that's what all of these people are doing with mutants. And we have to defend ourselves against it. Like, it's a totally legitimate perspective. And it's one of the things. I'm going to switch over to Star Wars for a second because it's one of the things that bothers me about Star Wars is this was not as bad, I think, in the original trilogy, but especially in the new one, the idea that like the dark side people would see themselves as being evil and on the dark side, I always found ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like their perspective should be you Jedi, you're limiting yourself unnecessarily by some kind of stupid moral code. You could have so much more power, you could be so much more effective, and you're unnecessarily limiting yourself by having made up moral standards about what kind of power is right or wrong. And instead, I have embraced the full spectrum of powers that are available to me, and I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to do much more good with that, right? Like, even when Vader says, you know, we can bring order to the galaxy, we can stop these conflicts, right? He doesn't think I'm an evil person. And it's a little cheesy when Kylo Ren is saying, I'm tempted by the light side. You know, I don't want to be good. I want to stay evil. And you're like, okay, you shouldn't think that's of yourself as evil. Nobody thinks of themselves as being evil.
Right.
But anyway,
and so that's what I'm trying to get at with Fisk is that, like, he doesn't think what he's doing is evil and he's just trying to improve everything or whatever. So,
but that just means he's a good villain. I don't think that means he's right. Like, I don't know if there's evidence that that's his motivation is to actually clean up the city. A lot of the stuff he does seems to be enriching himself and his friends. And if you talk,
isn't his whole background that he grew up in Hell's Kitchen and it sucked and he wants to make it better?
I mean, that's his story. I don't know. I don't know if we've seen evidence that's what he's doing.
Yeah, that's true. Well, anyway, we might see that in season two if I ever watch it, which I probably won't.
If you're talking about like corruption in like the police department and stuff, he's part of that. Like, he talks about owning the police.
Yeah, but like, I would rather own the police and have them do what I want than have someone else own them. Right? I'm just like,
yeah, I just don't want Fisk to own them.
Yeah. Okay, I'm with you.
Okay.
But so we're gonna have to cut loads of that, Will. I can't have it because it sounds like I'm.
I think we should leave it all in.
No, mate. Why do you just want to like publicly shame me?
You came out in favor of.
I'm just talking things through, bro.
Okay. Go on to the next point.
Okay. So anyway, if we're talking about the fact that I want the ensemble cast, again, if I compare it to Jessica Jones, I've got the ensemble cast. Like, everyone in that show is very well developed and interesting, even if they've got quite limited screen time. The only one in there that's slightly wooden to start with is Simpson. And even then, after a while, he gets really good. And so I just really like him, how they, and they're not necessarily banded together. They're not like a lovable ragtag of misfits, but all the characters in that show are interesting. And so then you have interesting dynamics that come out of it, which is really lacking in this show, which feeds into point number three, which is the pace. And it's like, fuck me, man, this show really drags. Like, I can't, honestly, I really struggle to remember what happened in single episodes because they all felt exactly the same, like they were going over the same thing. And so I've read one criticism which talked about how basically the problem is that Matt in his singularity and then Foggy and Karen as a duo are both investigating the exact same thing in two different ways, which is why it feels long and repetitive and crappy. But like, I just found the whole thing really labored. And so I mean, part of me was like, is it me? Do I just not have a good attention span, right? Because of, you know, being 2K16 and there's so much interesting stuff out there and I'm like on Twitter and dual screening and whatever. But actually, I don't think that can be it. I think if it's good quality, slow burn television and film, like I'm super invested. Like I love The Wire and whatever. So I just don't think that's the problem. I think it's just, as I said, because of the reasons above, it's like really threadbare. And then the plot is very repetitive. And the only time this worked out well was during the, I use the word lightly, homage to Old Boy, that corridor scene, where, as you've talked about already in this podcast, like he gets knackered. They've all got the wind kicked out of him. And so they like take a minute between fighting each other and like tussling and stuff.
That's the best scene in the show. That is amazing.
It's the best scene in the show. Absolutely. And like, obviously, everyone compares it to Old Boy because now any fight that happens in any corridor from now between the end of time will be like compared to that really infamous scene. But like, I think in some ways this scene was almost better because, yeah, Matt's exhausted and winded and leaning over and they're like, it felt much more like realistic and stuff. And I was really into it.
Yeah, the scene she's talking about, in case you guys don't know, is in episode 2, I think, right? It's in episode 2.
Yeah, it's really early.
He's going to rescue the little girl.
Kid that got kidnapped,
right?
Yeah.
And there's just like this long one shot shooting down the hallway of him fighting and he's just knocking in and out of doorways. And it's probably the most realistic fight scene I've ever seen.
Yeah,
even if it isn't actually realistic, like the feeling and the whole tone of it is just so brutal. And it's made more brutal because they like it's slow.
It's like, really slow.
They're like keeled over, like leaning, like gasping for breath on the wall between fighting each other. And it just felt something about it just makes it feel much more like this is an actual tangible fight between human beings who get winded and who get punched in the stomach and have to like take a breath or who fall down and take a few minutes to get up before they can punch each other again.
Completely. Which I feel like, don't get me wrong, I haven't been in that many fights, but like I feel like this is exactly what would happen, right? And like they're out of breath and they're visibly like they're weaker and shaking a little bit and like they've taken some real blows. And yes,
and they did it all with one shot too, which is amazing from a choreographic perspective. And I assume the stuntman is happening when he like gets knocked into a room and you can't see him for a second, and then a stuntman comes out and does a bunch of stunts, and then the stuntman gets knocked into a room, and then Matt comes back out, or Charlie comes back out.
It was really well done.
And that's like a simple trick to do, but it works amazingly, and they get this single shot with a full fight. I mean, that must have been really hard for the actors to pull that off. Like,
you know. I agree. And that's what I mean. It's like, that is, like you said it, it's like probably one of the best fight scenes I've ever seen as well. And so, the slow pace really works. But otherwise, the show is so repetitive. On the one hand, you've got, like Foggy and Karen investigating Union Allied. And then on the other hand, you've got Matt investigating like the street level killings, which they're all Fisk, right? It's all the same person.
I think part of that is also that Foggy and Karen are investigating things that the audience already knows about to some degree. Like, we have more information because we're following Matt. And you got to be careful. You're having characters who have less information than the audience trying to learn what the audience already knows. It's really easy to make that kind of boring.
Repetitive and boring. And I think as well, like, if it's supposed to show how the legal process is broken because look how slow it is, and like Matt just being on the streets knows more stuff or whatever, like, why is Matt taking as long? It's like annoying. And I don't know, it just they seem to be in bars getting drunk / crying all the time on this show, and that is like my prevailing memory of it, of those two characters, is them just being drunk in bars, and it just was too repetitive after a while.
The pace,
I didn't like it.
I think both of those things, the you wanting it to be ensemble and the pacing, so my best compliment about these shows, just Jessica Jones and Daredevil, not all the Marvel TV shows, but it's that the medium, I think, lends itself much more to the way comic book stories are told. So
do you want to elaborate on that? I'm interested in this.
Like, you have in comic books, you have like, you know, a single issue story that'll happen, but you also have larger arcs that are going on. You have side plots. You build up this cast of characters over time, where you have, you know, how many characters are there in the Batman comics, including villains, right? There's a huge rogues gallery. You could just add up all of this stuff over years and years and years. And you have different threads that can get picked up and left behind, and you can do so much more like foreshadowing of things that are going to happen and building up relationships or having characters go through different stages where, I mean, sometimes it's extreme and it's like, oh, this character is now turned evil and now they have to, you know, they're going through their dark period. But you have, you know, you, or even if it's more subtle and they're just developing and becoming a, you know, slightly better person or something.
Right.
And part of it is also you can do like the exploration of powers. And it's, this is something that like comic book nerds always like, is like figuring out like, what are the limits of this person's powers? How did they get them? How did the powers work? And like over the course of many, many episodes or many seasons, many years or many issues of a comic, like you can play with all that stuff. And comic book movies, I haven't really been able to do that. Like comic, they got like one story to tell. Most of all the other like side characters and other members of, you know, villainous rogues galleries or, you know, sidekicks and other heroes, they show up in movies like cameos a lot of times.
Right.
It's like, oh, here's this, you know, somebody like, was it Beast or some, I can't remember. In the X-Men movies, you had a lot of other X-Men that would like show up very briefly in cameos. Like, you know, someone would be interviewed on the news. I think it was Hank McCoy is being interviewed on the news in like X-Men 1 or something. And all they can do is little shout outs because you have 2 hours and you got like one plot. And so the benefit of the TV show is that you can kind of mirror the way that comic books actually work. And I think Jessica Jones does a way better job of that than Daredevil. Daredevil's almost like a movie stretched out across
13 episodes.
Right. And they are building
up. At least 3 episodes too long, at least.
They're building up some. Yeah, I think it is. I think it's more than that. But they're building up some of these other characters and stuff. But it's just, they're not central still. They're still kind of like really on the side. And the one-off plots that happen in single episodes aren't that interesting or don't stand alone. And I think
to the point that I can't recall them.
Right. It kind of all blends together. So it's like stretched out across. And, you know, the production values are movie quality and the choreography is amazing and the acting was good. And so, like, there's all of those benefits that I think is why it stands out above something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or other TV show.
Which is just terrible.
Other TV show comic book stories.
Apparently that picks up about halfway through season one. But
I've never seen an episode of it.
I couldn't get through it.
But Jessica Jones does a way better job of like having characters with side plots going on and you follow them and you see them get involved in things. And it's setting up a bunch of future stuff like, you know, the IGH and this organization that's experimenting on people and just giving, you know, giving Patsy her own story and giving Simpson his own story and letting you follow them sometimes and see what they're up to and having them be involved in stuff that you assume it's going to connect back up at some point, but it might not necessarily.
Right. And the thing is like, you're right, because they have this overarch thing in Jessica Jones, right? It's Jessica versus Kilgrave in the same way that it's like Matt versus Fisk, but there's so much more stuff going on in Jessica Jones where there's just nothing happening in Daredevil. It's just like boring.
Yeah, I think it's a little too pared down.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Carry on.
No, that was it. I was just going to keep... I was basically praising the medium. That's something that I assume can get fixed in Daredevil Season 2.
Sure. And, like, I mean, I will say that, you know, maybe they have just spent Season 1 establishing these two characters to, you know, really, build up this real antagonistic relationship between the two of them, and then next season there'll be more development potentially, but at the moment it's just lackluster and it's poor and it annoyed me. But the fourth thing that I was going to bring up is the tone. Now I mean, whenever you and I talk about superhero stuff, we tend to talk about this kind of thing, which is like, I call it, like, and I think everyone else calls it as well, like the Dark Knight effect, where like everyone wants to
grim dark
everyone wants everything to be dark, and it's like, there's no levity in this show at all. The only levity they really have is from Foggy, I guess, but he's rubbish and so it doesn't really work. And so because there's so little of it, whenever it does happen, it comes out kind of either sarcastic and kind of mean, or it sounds like when Jim Gordon makes jokes in The Dark Knight, and then it just sounds really cheesy. Like when Jim Gordon in Batman Begins opens up the Batmobile and he's like, I gotta get me one of those. And I'm like, that sounds stupid and cheesy and weird because the rest of the show is so dark and heavy. And so they kind of aim for this, like,
everything Gary Oldman says is gold.
I love him with my life until I found out he was super problematic. But anyway, he's a serious black, so I'll forgive him anything. So yeah, they kind of, I feel like with Daredevil, they've like aimed for this like film noir type edge to it, and it doesn't quite work, right? Whereas with Jessica Jones, they totally do it, except for that opening line, which I will never forgive. It's like the most cringe thing that ever happened on television. When they do the voiceover with Jessica, and she's like, something like, they say New York's a city that never sleeps. Well, it sleeps around, or something like that. And it sounds like so cheesy, like it's from like really poor pulp noir. But anyway, so other than that, I think Jessica Jones achieves this like noir-y type edge to it. Daredevil just doesn't.
They pull off a different kind of dark by going with the noir route that works way better, I think.
Right?
Where it's like, it can kind of be a little hammy, and there can kind of be like jokes, and the characters, they're involved in bad things, but they're like still like, you know, making jokes and being self-deprecating about it. And it works because it's like that noir tone.
The thing is, Jessica is like, you know, she's hard drinking, loner, self-deprecating, got a lot of like her own stuff going on. So the tone really suits it. Whereas Matt, I'm just like, he's just not very complex. And so it doesn't quite work. I don't know. But anyway, I found the tone very difficult because, as I said, they're like torturing people through their optic nerve. They're like throwing people off buildings, leaving them in dumpsters, getting really drunk and being mean to each other. Like the whole show, I was like, it's just depressing. That's what it all comes down to. The fact that the kindest portrayal of like affection is between the villain and his partner, like that's weird, right? It's not okay. And I just, I find that really, really like, I just don't like watching it because it just bores me. And if I want to watch that kind of, you know, dark depiction or whatever, then I'll watch The Dark Knight. I'm fine with that. Or I'll watch something else, you know, like that does it well. And I just feel like it didn't do it well at all. And it leads into the thing that I hate most about this show. But I don't know if you want to talk about anything more about that element of it before I move on.
No, but by the way, I don't think it's his optic nerve. It's the trigeminal nerve.
Okay. All right. Will Moya, MD. Shove something in his eye.
It's very close to his eye. So you're not wrong. I just, you know, before somebody writes in and tells us, we don't know the difference between an optic nerve and a trigeminal.
I don't know the difference between those two nerves. So whenever I've spoken about optic nerve, I basically mean his eye. I'm pretty sure she said optic nerve, but anyway, maybe not. Who cares? Either way, it's still bullshit. It doesn't matter if he knows the correct like name for this nerve. It's still not okay that he chose to torture a guy.
It's a nerve in your face around your eyeballs. Yeah.
It's bad. Like, and yeah, he like, yeah, it's not, I could have done without seeing that. And talking about violence, I could have done without seeing. The thing that lost this show for me, like really, was Wilson Fisk's backstory. So for those people that haven't seen it or can't quite remember, Wilson Fisk's mum is a survivor of domestic abuse from her husband, right? And this I find very difficult when people put it in TV shows because I think it's horrible and triggering and gross. And also because I feel like survivors of domestic violence, they rarely get any form of justice. And I'm just not sure what level of domestic violence I think is really okay to portray on TV shows, which is a whole other kind of topic that we could discuss at some point. But in light of that, the first two scenes with his mother, I was quite interested in. So the first scene, she's a little nervous, right? She's kind of a bit jittery around the dad. And so you notice it because the actress does a really fine job of portraying that kind of nervousness. And in the next scene, she's got a few bruises, like visible bruises, and is nervous again. So anyone that's watching this show understands what's being inferred here, right? Like we've all watched enough TV and we know enough about life to know that if that happens, this is what's suggested, that there's violence in the home. And then the third scene where we see the mum, the dad like just starts really massively attacking her. And then Wilson Fisk, baby Wilson Fisk, is like watching, or then his dad tells him to look at the white wall. And then you've just got this long shot of this kid looking at the wall, and then the sounds of this woman being attacked in the background. So first of all, I have a really massive problem with any kind of media that uses sexual violence or domestic violence against a woman to further a male plot line, like, or a male story, like, I think, or anyone's story that isn't their story. Like, I think it's really gross. But also, I just felt that the representation of the violence in that episode was so unnecessary, like, because, like I said, they had already kind of inferred what was going on. So it was at that moment that I was like kind of done with the show. And I understand that they wanted to like have this subplot, this backstory included in order to develop Fisk's character, but they have literally introduced this woman for one episode. She has like maybe 8 minutes of screen time, and for all of that time she's just a victim of domestic violence. And then she turns up much later on and she's like super old, and she's in a home and she talks a little bit. But I feel like what I would have liked to have seen is more of her and him when he was a kid. Like, they could have done some flashes in earlier episodes to just develop her a little bit outside of being a victim slash survivor of this crime. So yeah, that's another part of the show where I was just like kind of done with it.
They did that much more with the father. They like showed a lot of interaction between.
They showed so much with him, played by Herc, who I thought was Frank Sobotka. It really confused me when he first came on screen. Like, so Herc has basically turned into Frank Sobotka, but there you go. That's wire references for people that have seen that show. But yeah, I think they developed, you're right, they developed the dad way more than they developed the mom. She's just there for this, and so I always find that quite difficult and kind of gross. So yeah, that's the, I think that was the turning point for me. I was kind of shaky already because of the torturing via the nerve, that I don't know what it's called, and his general violent slash apathetic nature. It was very odd. And then this happened and it was kind of a turning point for me where I was just like not as into it anymore.
Herc is also Dom from Entourage, if there's any Entourage watchers out there.
I've literally
drop a little Entourage reference.
Entourage.
So yeah, I mean, I totally get that criticism, and that's, yeah, we've talked about possibly doing like a depiction versus endorsement of violence, yeah, on TV, especially sexual violence or domestic violence, and like what degree of depiction is okay, or why, what is, yeah, it, what is the problems with how it's often depicted, which I think is the thing that you said, that a lot of times these kind of situations are used to forward another person's motivations for some other plot rather than being, yeah, kind of treated with respect for their own, yeah, kind of story or their own plot. And yeah, I assume, this is not a defense of it, but I, you know, I always, yeah, try to imagine what's the intent on the author's part.
The motivation, right?
Right. Yeah. I assume it's because they thought they had to depict it to such a degree that you would buy a little kid killing his father with like a hammer. Yeah. And that we wouldn't buy it without seeing it. Whether, I don't know whether or not that's true, but I think that's, I think the idea was like, you know, force the audience to be so kind of oppressed by watching this, which is really, it's an incredibly hard scene to watch.
Yeah.
That when Fisk finally snaps, we can buy that a little kid would do this, would have been pushing this. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not the worst one I've ever seen by a long shot, because they don't show, you know, they don't show as much of it as some other TV shows and films have done, but it's still really violent, and I find that quite difficult. But I think I would compare it to Jessica Jones in terms of Jessica Jones is, she often mentions the fact that Kilgrave raped her, yeah, continuously for the 18 months that they were together.
I have this in my notes. I love that scene.
Right? Right. It's like, you know, she's, and yet they didn't feel the need to portray it or do flashbacks or do anything like that, because we all understand what that is. We understand what it would have looked like. You know what I mean? We don't need it necessarily to be portrayed. And I think a lot of directors and writers, they try to distance themselves from their inclusion of sexual violence and domestic violence, or just pure plain violence, you know, standard violence, by saying, well, it happens in the world, so therefore it's authentic. And I think that by trying to put that distance between you and your work, you're kind of not taking accountability for the fact that, but you've chosen how it's framed. You've chosen exactly how many times someone's hit. You've chosen the angle it's shot at, you know, whatever they're wearing, how much blood there is, all of that is like your choice. So I think it's, I don't buy it as a defense.
Directors and writers who don't own their decisions for what they're including, whether or not it's the right or wrong decision, like they're the ones who are putting it in. Yeah, very right, obviously. Like you can't just, it's such a cop out to be like, well, this thing just exists and therefore I'm not responsible for including it. Like go ahead and include it, but own it and give us a justification for why it's necessary for the story.
Exactly. And so, so that was, that's to do with tone, because again, I think it's just so violent and it kind of comes out of nowhere. And like I said, the character's not established. The mum is just introduced to be, you know, this, to be a victim of this crime. And that's really, I think modern viewers expect a little more than that, really. I know I do. So yeah, that's probably the final point that I would make on that. One thing that I would say about the show is, like I said, I really enjoyed the fight scenes. And when characters were on screen, I warmed to them a little. And I'm like interested in seeing what happens with Karen, especially after she killed Wesley. That was an awesome scene because it came out of nowhere and I did not expect it. So I'm quite interested to see what she does, like her next steps.
And they hinted at Karen's shadowy past where she's done things that she's not proud of.
So she's been very underdeveloped this season. I'm hopeful that she will be more developed in season two. And similarly with Claire, because Claire turned up in Jessica Jones. So I'm interested to see how they develop her as a character as well. I mean, I'm invested in those terms. Like I might be convinced to watch it, and I would be interested to hear what listeners think about this show, because, I can always be swayed. But at the moment, I feel quite that I was just not into it. And like, I don't know. I mean, so that I don't come across as a hater, I would suggest something like, I would recommend Gotham in lieu of watching this show, because Gotham is a great ensemble piece. It's much lighter in tone. So it's much easier to watch when you've like had a long day and you're just coming home from work and you don't want to watch someone be tortured. Like there's still violence in it and it's still problematic in the way that all shows are. But I think it's much more entertaining and it's got some really great characters in it. It's got like Fish Mooney. They've got the Penguin when he was like young and starting out. They've got like baby Selena Kyle when she was like a kind of a tween. And it's like fun and it's got a lot going on. There's like it's got stories of the week and then this overarching narrative and it's just interesting and I just enjoyed it so much more than Daredevil. And you know, even Ben McKenzie plays Jim Gordon, he plays him pretty straight, but like even that he's much more likable than Matt is. So that would be what I'd say about that.
All right. I like Daredevil. I just found it to be a little bland, I think probably for the reasons that you're saying that.
Yeah, but maybe season two will be better.
Right.
I mean, who knows?
But it's all, I mean, the production values, the acting, you know, the sets, everything. It felt like a movie, which I think is probably the best thing that it did was bring this like really high quality, polished superhero TV show to, you know, the forefront of everybody's mind when like up until that point, I don't know what was the best that people were watching, like Arrow and Flash and.
I don't even know. I've never watched
Smallville.
Smallville. My God, I forgot about that show.
So
no, it's true. They've done the transition, right?
Yeah, and then see, after watching Jessica Jones, I'm like, wow! Like you can really get into some comic book things here. I wish that Daredevil had done that more. So, do we want to switch and talk about Jessica Jones for a little bit?
Yeah, let's. I like I said, I found her. She's problematic, and I think that there are some things that need to be questioned. But in general, I really liked Jessica Jones as a show, and I liked her as a character.
Yeah, it's it was much more brutal and dark in a very interesting way where like everybody's traumatized and trauma is very real and it's something that like everyone who interacts with Kilgrave has to go through, and the show gives like a lot of respect to this idea that this villain is really like violates you in a serious way.
Yeah.
And once he was more in the show, I think I was a little, I wasn't hooked on the first few episodes and I thought like, okay, like we're kind of in like the same kind of area that Daredevil was in here. And once they got Kilgrave interacting with Jessica a lot. And some of the ways that they like paired them up felt a little contrived to me, but I think it was good for the show to have them interacting as much as possible. And he became like this really interesting, complicated villain
who
is horrible and, you know, just completely selfish. And then there's sometimes where he would talk and you'd kind of be like, I get what he like, I get his thing a little bit. I understand. I mean, I still think he's, you know, he's a monster, but I thought they did a really interesting kind of portrayal of him. And it's probably a lot of that is because of David Tennant.
Yeah. David Tennant's a really, I really like him. I think he's a really fantastic actor. He plays a mania very interestingly. So that's C.T. Kilgrave, I think. I didn't know anything about Kilgrave as a character or Jessica Jones or anything similarly before I started watching it. So I was really happy that it was good, especially because, let's face it, Supergirl is going to be awful. So I was just really kind of pleased to see a show with a female lead that was kind of dark and interesting and cool. And I think probably the best of all the superhero television shows. I say that having not seen many of them, like I haven't seen Arrow and whatever, but from what people have said about them, from what I've seen of other shows such as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think that this is probably the best one. And that was like exciting. But I think when I was also really pleased because, so, you know, I talked about Buffy being a strong female character, whatever that means. I hate that phrase and we need to think of a new one. But like, you know, the strong female character trope is obviously something that's quite difficult. And I think even more so in a superhero.
Is the like term that human
being,
should replace it.
Human being, yeah. But yeah, I think she's brilliant, like the way that she's done, because she's obviously, she's been through trauma and she's got a lot of, you know, stuff going on there. But like, there was nothing about her that kind of screamed a stereotype to me at all. And I really liked it. And they didn't kind of starbuck her. And they could have, because she's so harsh. So they could have done that. And it would have become quite what's the word for it? Like, like one-dimensional. And that would have been annoying. So I really liked her. And I think it's Kirsten Ritter, right? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she did an amazing job, actually. Kristen Ritter. I can't pronounce it, sorry. Yeah, Kristen Ritter. She did a great job in the portrayal as well. And I think that the two of them played off against each other very well. And like I would say, I mean, she tortures Kilgrave, right? She electrocutes him.
Yeah, and forces him to watch the videos of him being tortured. There's like, you know, some psychological torture going on there.
Yeah, she does some really dark stuff to him. So again, like I'm not excusing it, but like I think how they framed her makes me not okay with it. But you know what I mean? I'm not as put off by it in the way that I was with Matt. Like I tried to compare the two of them and I was like, well, what is it about Jessica that makes me more, I don't know, understanding, forgiving, whatever, like less concerned with the fact that, no, not less concerned, that's not the right word, but you know, she still does what Matt does. She still tortures people, but there's something.
There's a different power differential going on, I think, with her and Kilgrave than there is with, you know, Matt and some
him
thug.
Just finding a guy on the street, right? But yeah, there's definitely what I mean, I guess, is that you can be like capable of immoral acts and be, you know, a bit of a bad person in some ways and still be the hero and a likable character and a good character. So anyway,
Jamie Lannister,
your boy Jamie Lannister, my boy Spike. I mean, there's a couple of them. And again, I think it's about owning it. I think part of the problem I have with Matt is that he's all like, I'm just doing this because of hashtag justice, whereas she's just like, I think this is the only way that we can get through this. She is pragmatic. Maybe she's your pragmatic hero and that's why you like her. Whereas Matt is trying to play himself as a romantic hero, but is actually just, I don't know, terrible.
I liked her. I mean, the Jessica line that I think sums her up the best and is great is when her rib is broken. And I think it's Trisha's telling her, like, you know, you need to go to sleep or you'll heal wrong. And she's like, that's the story of my life. But that, like, that idea of, like, you know, she has been through all of these things and she has kind of overcome them, but she's still kind of broken because of it.
Yeah.
And they did a really good job of making her, I think, not one-dimensional. Like you said, like, she has genuine affection for Trish. She really, really cares about Hope, which sometimes I was like rolling my eyes a little bit. Like, why do you care so much about Hope getting off? This guy is like literally the most dangerous person on the planet, potentially. And you are putting a lot of people at risk just to get Hope out of prison, which I understand why, you know, Hope should not be in prison for it. But like, she did some really dumb things, like letting letting his parents go in the cage with him, having Hogarth, the lawyer, watch him while she leaves for like 3 hours. And it was all for the idea of like getting justice for Hope, when every other character is like, Kilgrave is too dangerous to live. Like, he should just be put down. And I was kind of like, yeah, he should just be put down.
Yeah. That's because you're the pragmatic, right? This is the thing, that her trying to save Hope is a capital R romantic hero thing. Right. Right?
No, and
it's like, I can save this innocent person.
And I don't think the show was 100% like approving of her doing that. I think we were supposed to kind of wonder if she's, if her being like a romantic hero and trying to do the right thing is a bad idea here.
Yeah, if it's going to cost, right?
And I also really liked her like crush on Luke. I liked that the episode was named Crush Syndrome, and it was about what happened to Kilgrave, but it's when you really get to see that like she's kind of like pining away for this guy, and you don't even realize, you know, the horrible backstory that connects them. But I thought that was nice and rounded her out. And her and Trish's relationship, I thought, was great, and the way that they have grown up together and are sisters that protect each other, but are really very different people. And that Trish is almost like the kind of idealistic hero who would want to save the world. But Jessica is the one with the superpowers, and she's the kind of broken, jaded one.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Their dichotomy was interesting.
I know. And I love the scene where they fight Simpson together.
Yeah.
And she takes like the, you know,
that was a great scene.
She takes the soldier enhancement pills, the combat enhancement pills. That was awesome.
And trashed up that apartment.
Oh, they did.
Such a great scene.
And I know the fight choreography was really different than in Daredevil. Like, they would do this thing where they showed it would almost make it look effortless for Jessica. Yeah. Like, she would just pick some guy up and like toss him. And it felt less kind of like kinetic and brutal than when Matt fought, but it was, it felt almost more comic booky and superhero, which I think is what they were going for. And it was kind of good, like they could communicate how powerful she was, because like, you know, she just tossed these guys and they'd go through windows and they'd go through walls. And and then when you finally,
I don't know how they did that, it looked great.
It looked, I know, them trashing the apartment was great. And then when they finally, you know, you finally get like a superhero on superhero fight with her and Luke, then it felt like much more like brutal, and it was good. So it was a different style of fighting, and that still really, really worked and fit the tone of the show.
Yeah.
I have more compliments about Kilgrave.
Go for it. I love David Tennant. I'm always happy to hear compliments about him.
Yeah. So this, I mean, outside of Loki, who I think is the other only other person we can make an argument, this has got to be the most interesting MCU villain we've seen.
Yeah. Although I think Loki is so problematic. Like, people love him, and there's like cuddly toys of him, and it's like, he murdered 88 people in 3 days or whatever it is that, you know. I think people, he's their, what's the phrase that he used about not wanting to make Jamie that?
Personal favorite white boy.
Yeah. That's the
Draco in leather pants.
Draco in leather pants. There you go. Yeah. I think that is with Loki, but I agree. He's an interesting character.
But Kilgrave, I mean, I think just from like supervillain powers perspective, like, he doesn't have powers to fight the hero with his body. He's not super strong. He's not fast. He can't fly. All he can do is control people's minds. And they did, I mean, they even had Loki able to do that in Avengers. And it, like, you know, okay, whatever. He made Hawkeye bad. But like, they did such a good job of showing you how terrifying and how dangerous this power is, that he can just make people do what he wants. He can just walk into a room and tell them all to attack Jessica, or he can walk into a room and tell them all to kill themselves if Jessica attacks him. And it's such a good dynamic where, like, he has no conscience, or basically has no conscience, and he can use Jessica's conscience against her, which is, you know, one of the best dichotomies between superheroes and supervillains, is that, like, you use the superheroes' concern and their morality against themselves.
Okay.
You use them being a good person against them. And I don't know, he was really creepy and scary.
I really, I liked the scene as well where he was talking to Jessica and he was saying, I'm a victim, and he was doing his whole thing. And then he said to her, he was like, do you know how much of a struggle it is to have to think about everything that you say?
Yeah.
And then he made reference to how he told a guy to
go screw himself.
Yeah. And like realize what that, you know, and I kind of, you know, I felt myself, you know, my conflicted conscience thinking like, oh yeah, poor Kilgrave. And then obviously it's like, no, he's a terrible, monstrous human. But
that was an exact moment
well done.
Where I was, what I was talking about, him being kind of sympathetic when he tells his side of the story. And I think there is an element of, I mean, yes, like, so he's definitely a monster. He's, you know, it does horrible things to people. I love Jessica making him confront that he raped her and that basically, you know, he violated her. And I loved him saying like, I hate that word. And then making it all about how he was like tortured as a kid. So it's not his fault.
Yeah.
Very, I think, realistic kind of response to someone who just doesn't want to face what he's done. Right. And like, he makes these excuses like you were happy. You know, I was lavishing you with all of these rich hotel rooms and dinners. And like, how can you complain? How can you say I raped you? That's so ridiculous. Just kind of refusing to face that, like, you know, he just uses people, and he can try to make it seem like it's not using them because he gives them nice things. But like, that's what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked how they portrayed, you know, the fact that you can, even if terrible things have happened to you, like his parents torturing him when he was a child, or, well, not realizing it, but actually torturing him, whatever was really going on there, it doesn't excuse your behavior. You're still accountable for it. And I liked how they explored that with him. Like, Jessica was like, no, it doesn't matter what happened. You're choosing to do this right now.
Right.
And I liked how she tried to hold him accountable when he was trying to excuse his actions because of, you know, terrible things that were done to him, which you don't see very often in shows.
Yeah. It was great. It was totally good. I wish that they had played a little bit more with the idea of like, what is Kilgrave supposed to do? Like, he says that line, you know, like, I have to think about everything I say to people. And the idea of his relationship to like humanity as a whole, like, he's kind of like a god in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really fascinating the way, I think they did a really good job of creating the personality of someone who would have that kind of power, like how that would warp you over time. And I think, can I talk about dogs for a second?
Go for it.
Okay, so this is not a direct one-to-one analogy, but humans, you know, for, I don't know, tens of thousands of years, 100,000 years, have bred dogs, artificially selected dog traits and genes for obedience.
Yeah.
And then even, you know, when a specific dog is born, they are a lot of times are trained to be completely obedient. And so we have this, like, I think what I'm going for is there's a little bit of like, Kilgrave relates to humans the way humans relate to dogs.
Yeah.
And so, you know, humans don't even think twice about, like, you know, some dog is over sitting next to you and wants to play or wants to pet you, and you say like, go lay down. And the dog doesn't really want to go lay down, but like, you know, it's 100,000 years of evolution and training since birth that even if he doesn't want to do something, he has to listen to you. Yeah. And we've kind of implanted this need for dogs to do what we say and into them. And so the dog listens to you and he just goes and lays down. And like, nobody has any problem with this. And I'm not saying we necessarily should have a problem with this. Like, you know, whatever. It's a dog. I understand. But there is some element of like, how much is Kilgrave just not a human and not relating to humans in other in other way? Like, humans are like dogs to him, right? So he says, you know, Jessica, come here. You know, somebody go lay down. Okay, you go make me food. Like, it's the same way that we treat dogs, and we kind of don't really have concern about, you know, levels of consent with them.
Yeah.
And I think most dog owners, if someone came up and was like, you know, you're mentally raping your dog, you're telling them what to do, they don't have any free will anymore, they'd kind of be like, look, I don't know, what do you want me to do here? This is how it is. This is the relationship between humans and dogs. Like, that's kind of Kilgrave's attitude with humans. And I kind of get where he's coming from. Mm-hmm. It doesn't excuse it. Obviously, it doesn't make me think that, like, he's a good person or anything. And, like, he is clearly doing horrible things to people. And he doesn't seem overly concerned with, like, you know, trying to be empathetic or see where humans are coming from. And even when Jessica gets him to do quote unquote heroic stuff, it's still all about himself and like, oh, look how she looked at me with such gratitude. Like, I feel so good. Yes. I felt so needed. Is that why you do it? And Jessica's kind of like a little bit, like, she's not kinda ruling out that that's part of it. But, it's a really interesting kind of villain who is, he's kind of like Dr. Manhattan, who's not a villain, but the idea of like superpowers setting you so far apart from other human beings that you can't even relate to them at the same level anymore. And like, maybe that makes you a villain.
Yes.
And it also, it makes me wish the MCU could use mutants, because X-Men became kind of all about this, the idea of like minorities and how did this group of people relate to like the dominant group, which is non-mutant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I think that might be unfortunate that X-Men kind of became all about bigotry. But the reason part of it became all about that is because it's a really interesting idea that these people with superpowers are fundamentally different from everyone else. And they touch on it a little bit. Like, there's the one side plot with the woman who something happened to her when the Avengers fought in New York City, and she's taking.
So she goes after Jessica.
Right. And like, that is a fascinating part of superheroes relating to normal people, and it's way more prominent in like the when you have mutations as a justification. The MCU can't do that because Fox owns the right to the X-Men and to mutations.
Yes.
So everything has to be done with like experiments and drugs and stuff. But when they were touching on that, like, I wanted more of it. I wanted more of like this is possibly like a different species, and how they relate to humans is going to be like really complicated. And I guess, you know, the MCU is going to deal with this in a broader sense. I assume Captain America Civil War, like, that's going to come up a lot. The fact that, you know, regular humans are afraid of superheroes now, and they want some way to control them. But Kilgrave was a really good example of it. And I don't know. It was interesting. And I maybe this ties into the whole idea that TV shows can do this stuff better than movies, because you have time to explore people's powers, and you have time to explore more nuanced things like how they relate to each other.
And like, you got the full range of what his power can actually do. So it can be like Smile Jessica, which is a very small thing, right up to getting loads of people in a hospital to attack a single person, or, you know, whatever. Right. Quieting everyone at a 2,500 person concert, or whatever it was as well. Like, they showed the scale. But I think what I really liked about this show is that it's a show all about consent, because that's his superpower, right? He can remove consent from anyone. And I think that that's a really interesting thing to, a theme to look at. And it's a theme that we don't necessarily look at in a lot of TV shows, so I was really into it from that perspective as well. And I think as well, I mean, it's a nature versus nurture thing with him, as you know, how much of it is not his fault, because he is kind of different to humans. He has a different moral spectrum. And I think your analogy, I wasn't sure where you were going with it when
with
you were
humans,
like,
we're
talking about dogs, and I was like, what's happening, Will? What are you? But I think it kind of works, like, in the sense that he sees himself as other, or he sees himself as above it, like in a hierarchy. And how, I mean, if you'd never had to want for anything in your life, and I mean really ever, like, whatever you wanted to happen would happen, like, how different your perspective.
There's that scene where he's at the dinner table and he's like, is this what everyone else does? They just sit around and wait for people to do what they want them to do.
And he's like, oh, it's unbearable. And like, you know, it was interesting. And like, your comment about long form TV shows compared to shorter movies, I think, you've nailed it, because you can have these small moments with him and Jessica doing something like that, which you'd have to cut from a movie. You'd be like, we cannot waste these 5.5 minutes or whatever.
Neighbor who comes over and is talking about how, oh, she had a bad feeling that Jessica's family was going to die, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, God, this woman's being such an asshole. And then Kilgrave is like, why are you saying this? Like, explain yourself, and forces her to do it. And it is kind of satisfying. And he looks at Jessica and he's like, wasn't that satisfying?
And you can see the part of her that's conflicted. I mean, it was just really well done. That whole, that was my favorite part of the entire series, actually, when they were like playing house. I thought their interaction was really interesting.
Except,
and I think the two of them had great chemistry.
Except when I thought they were going to have her consider actually working with him. And I was like, come on, Jessica, like, you can't be this naive.
Oh, I liked it though.
But then she didn't. Then she just kidnapped him and started torturing him. And I was like, okay.
All of a sudden, he's in a box. Stop putting villains in glass boxes, right? Why do people keep doing this? They can always get out.
Stop thinking that you're gonna like get one up on them. I've said this before that like it really satisfies my like nerdy obsessions when you do like the exploration of powers that you can do in a longer form medium. Like it's so cool to see little things like how do you heal Luke Cage? If you can't put a needle in his veins, if you can't like, you know, do surgery on him, like I know. And it's really like, that's like, I love this idea about super. It's in Avengers 2, them playing with Thor's hammer and seeing like who can pick it up. Like that's such a thing that would come up in nerd conversation. And I love that they can, you know, we can see it on screen and you could do it much more in a TV show. Or Jessica's strength, like how strong is Jessica? Can she actually fly? What are the limits of her flying? Like how much damage can she take? And Kilgrave's range, you know, him trying to expand the range. And they did a little
chemically and whatever. Yeah, it's cool.
They did a little bit of trying to explain that it's like a virus that moves through the air or something that, you know, but then they kind of hand waved it and they were like, well, now he's taking this medicine so it can work through speakers. And I was like, how does a virus get transferred through speakers?
Or, yeah, but it was all happening?
Yeah, it was also like, he's the virus. Is he the virus? Or I don't know. But there is a little shaky explanations, which I think if they just didn't explain it, sometimes that would have been better.
But that, they didn't explain it at all in Daredevil. Like, I still don't really understand how his radar works, but there like you go.
Chemicals spilled on him.
Something like it, makes him see blue stuff. I don't really know. I mean, I think it's interesting when they test the limits. I don't really mind about people trying to prove exactly why it happens. Like, probably the clearest one is the radioactive spider bite because he has spider abilities, right? So that kind of makes sense, and that's fine. But like, I don't really mind too much about knowing exactly why something works a particular way. But I agree with you that I really like it when they interrogate the extent of someone's power. Right.
That's why I wish the MCU could use mutation, because then you can just say they're mutants. That's so they have different powers. Whatever.
That's it. So whatever, it doesn't matter. And then you can figure out, you know, exactly how many, you know, how thick a wall Kitty Pryde can go through or whatever.
By the way, I keep saying MCU to people who don't know what I'm referring. It's the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which includes like, you know, the Thor and Captain America and Iron Man and Avengers movies.
Not Batman or Superman.
No, because it excludes all the Fox X-Men stuff and the Sony Spider-Man stuff.
Okay.
So it's only Disney, Disney's Marvel, Disney's Marvel Universe, which is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Daredevil, Jessica Jones,
we'll do a list.
Yeah, there's some other ones. But
the Wikipedia page.
That's what I say. That's what I mean by MCU.
Yeah.
I wish Jessica would have gone to the Avengers. Claire mentions going to Matt, which I liked. I loved Claire's cameo in it. She's my favorite, probably, from the Daredevil TV show. Rosario Dawson is awesome.
And beautiful.
But I there was moments where I was like, this guy's getting so dangerous. What, Jessica should just fly up to Stark Tower or whatever it is and be like, hey, I'm a superhero. I've got something that's a problem. And let Iron Man just smoke this guy.
It's one of those things, though, like what we talked about with Wesley and with Jamie and stuff. And it's like, man, if people just communicated more, like, there'd be so less.
It would ruin shows. Well, she might have legitimate reasons.
It'd
like,
be resolved straight away.
No
show.
I kind of wanted it to come up in conversation and then her show a legitimate reason for not wanting it. I don't know if I actually wanted them to do that. Like, I don't want the Avengers to get involved in this. But, you know, her saying something like, can you imagine if Kilgrave took control of the Hulk, of the big green guy? Just enough to be like, okay, now I understand why she's keeping this to herself kind of thing.
I love a knowing reference. You know, it's like they're always really satisfying for a fan.
I like them picking on Kilgrave's name, more knowing references. She was like, why don't you just call yourself Murder Corpse?
Yeah, it was good.
Okay.
That's great. Cool.
All right, so thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you, everyone. And thanks for all your feedback on previous episodes. Continue to do that. We would love to talk more about stuff. Tell me
how can they tweet you?
I'm at Kingdom Horse, all one word.
And I'm at Will Moyer.
You are indeed. Professional journalist name. I can't stop teasing you about that, sorry.
It's just my real name.
Because it's your real name. So people should message us and obviously tell me that I'm super wrong about Daredevil. Try and convince me. I'm always open to hear others' opinions and stuff. That's one of the reasons we did this podcast in the first place, right? So let us know what you think about it.
All right, and thanks for listening. Thanks everyone who gave us feedback on the episodes we've already done. And thanks to Joshua Duchesne for the music you're listening to.
Thanks, Joshua.
Bye, guys.
Bye.